Africa Live. What I'm saying is, ain't nobody gonna do this for us but us. Talk about a Barack Obama. Don't even talk to me about Barack Obama. Let's talk about Marcus Garvey. You know what I'm saying? The question ain't whether we vote for white power and white face or white power and black face. The question is whether we will be an independent people, or whether we remain colonized and oppressed until we are wiped out. This is African internationalism in action, y'all. Y'all need to get up on this. When we say we have to have power in our own hands, here we're talking about the African working class. What we can do is to have an organized capacity of the African workers in alliance with the poor peasants who takes state power for itself. Then we can begin to say we got justice in our own hands.
Africa Live.
Just raise up these incredible African leaders that we've had. It's critical that as African people we strive to be like them. I'm talking about the Marcus Garveys. I'm talking about the Fannie Lou Hamers. I'm talking about the Malcolm X's, the Kwame Nkrumahs, and today we have Omali Eshetela.
Brothers and sisters, Africans at home and abroad, welcome to Africa Live.
Uhuru, welcome to Africa Live here on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we have a great show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking about a few things on today. Later on, we'll be talking with Salvador Reza, who is the coordinator of Puente, a human rights organization based in Phoenix, Arizona, that deals primarily with immigration issues. We'll also be talking a bit about the Republican National Convention. On last week, we kind of summed up and went through the Democratic National Convention. We're going to do that a bit with the Republican National Convention on this show today. But before we get into those things, I want to say a little something briefly about the Jevon Dawson case. For those who are unaware, Jevon Dawson was a 17-year-old who was shot twice in the back on June 7th by a war-scarred Iraq war veteran by the name of Terrence Nemeth, who was who is now a member of the St. Petersburg Police Department, and is part of the St. Petersburg Police Department, is inflicting the same kind of occupation, the same kind of terroristic tactics on Africans inside U.S. borders as U.S. troops are doing in Iraq. And so Terrence Nemeth, battle-worn soldier who is probably suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome, shot down Javon Dawson, shot him twice in the back at a graduation party, actually shot into a crowd of kids and killed Javon Dawson at this graduation party. And this is something that's going to be talked about later on today on the WHO Radio, but I want to say, you know, a little something about it now as well. Because, you know, this week we saw a continuation of these terroristic tactics by the St. Petersburg Police Department. It wasn't enough, you know, apparently for them to have murdered one son of the Dawson family to have taken, you know, their child away from them. But now they've turned to attacking his 14-year-old little brother, Keon. In a continuation of tactics of harassment and intimidation, Javon Dawson's harassment and intimidation of witnesses to the murder of Javon Dawson. His brother Keon was snatched from his middle school class just earlier this week on Wednesday. And they snatched him from his class and subjected him to interrogation, to search of his body, belongings, and his locker. And the school, after having done this, subjected him to this kind of situation, told his mother that they got a tip from an agency that he had a gun. And of course, you know, he had no gun. This is clearly, you know, a continuation of the tactics of the St. Petersburg Police Department to attack witnesses, to attack family members of Javon Dawson. This is not the only attack that's happened recently. It was released in newspapers just about a week ago two officers of the St. Petersburg Police Department had stolen and defaced a truck that was on private property had, you know, on it posters of Javon Dawson as a memorial to this young African who was murdered by the police. And apparently these two cops took it upon themselves, after having talked with various other cops from the St. Petersburg Police Department, they took it upon themselves to go on this private property and tow this truck and deface the truck, to tear down the memorial posters that were put up on the truck, and to tow that truck, to steal that truck, because that's essentially what it is. They've stolen it, and they stolen it under the color of law. They stolen it, you know, and after they did this, they filled out false police reports to cover up their having stolen the truck. Well, on last week, this was exposed in newspapers in this area, and it became clear to those who it may not have been clear before, you know, that this is like regular dealings, you know, that this is a personal kind of thing. That these police are doing these attacks on the African community, that you know, these cops even admitted themselves that, you know, one of them admitted, you know, that they took, they stole the truck, they defaced the truck. They did this because they didn't agree with the message on it. And what is this? You know, they didn't agree with the message on it. This was a memorial to a murdered child, you know, a memorial, you know, so they didn't agree with the message. And so they stole the truck and defaced it. You know, this is a serious kind of thing. And, you know, what bothers me, well, one of the things that bothers me, one of the things that's so ridiculous is that, you know, even in the face of all of these things, the media has the ability to say, you know, that people aren't talking to police because the Uhuru movement tells them not to talk to police. That there's some kind of code of silence in the African community. But the reality is that if there is a reason why African people don't talk to the police, it's because of these type of actions. It's because of the continued harassment of people who had come forward before, because of the you know, police, the harassment of these police who would even, you know, go to the lengths of tearing down a memorial to a murdered child, you know, to a murdered young African, you know, you know, there have been witnesses who came forward, you know, at the beginning of this case, you know, shortly after the murder of Javon Dawson, shortly after this Iraq War veteran Terrence Nima shot him in the back twice at this graduation party. Witnesses came forward, and then following that, you know, there were parents, you know, the parents of several of these witnesses were calling the Uhuru House, talking about how their children were now being harassed and intimidated by police. The reality is that these tactics these tactics are regular, and you know, it should be seen that. It should be clear to us that, you know, looking at this stuff, that, you know, is that even in the case of Javon Dawson's murder, when you look at that the testimony of these cops, you know, can't even be trusted, you know, that the reports of the police can't be trusted, because if they'll steal a truck and deface it and lie about it to cover that up, then they'll lie to cover up their having murdered a 17-year-old. You know, it's terrible to see this kind of harassment. And I'm talking particularly about this latest attack on 14-year-old Keon Dawson, who was doing nothing but, you know, sitting in a classroom at school, you know, who, you know, attempting to learn, you know, to learn about, you know, to learn in the school, you know, attempting to get an education, you know, and you know, he's not even allowed to do that. You know, he has to be afraid to even go to school. You know, he can't even go to school without the fear of being snatched out of the classroom and harassed and intimidated by police. you know. And his mother said as much, that, you know, that she's afraid to even send a child to school, you know. And it's a ridiculous kind of thing. I think that, like I said, there's going to be more discussion about this later on in today's programming, not on this show, about the Javon Dawson case. But folks can feel free to email and call in here to talk about it on this show as well. We're going to be talking about a number of things, but it's all related, you know. The phone numbers here to call into WHO Radio, there's a U.S. number, which is 727-565-1599. That's country code 001. You can call the UK number, which is 020-8133-6629. And that's country code 44. You can call us through Skype anywhere in the African world. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio. That's all one word, all lowercase. Or you can email us at dj@uhururadio.com. We're going to be talking again later a little later on with Salvador Reza, who is the coordinator of Puente, an organization based in Phoenix, Arizona. A human rights organization based in Phoenix, Arizona, that is involved in actions now, demonstrations against the sheriff there that has been attacking, making serious attacks on the immigrant community, the Mexican community. So stay tuned here on WHORadio.com. We're going to go to break and come back with more here on Africa Live.
Swaying from side to side, no more marching, lighting. African People Socialist Party Chairman Omali Yeshitela's new book, One Africa, One Nation, is available now. In this historic collection, the chairman and representatives of the emerging African Socialist International explain why Africa and all its resources must be liberated and in the hands of African workers and peasants in Africa and everywhere. The chairman's new book, One Africa, One Nation, documents the process of building the African Socialist International, which is rapidly growing in countries throughout Africa and in the U.S., the Caribbean, and elsewhere around the world. For pictures of the chairman's recent book signing tour, and to order your copy of One Africa, One Nation, go to burningspearuhuru.com. That's www.burningspearuhuru.com.
Uhuru, and welcome back to Africa Live here on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we are today talking about the, well, we're doing a couple things, but right now we're going to be talking about the Republican National Convention. Those of you who were tuning in last week know that we played some clips from the Democratic National Convention and really, summed up, what was happening there. And you'll find, I think, that what was happening at the Republican National Convention was not very much different than what was happening at the Democratic National Convention. Greatest difference is how overt some of the statements in the Republican National Convention were, probably the most significant difference was the fact that that the Republican National Convention was attacking Obama, whereas the Democratic National Convention was attacking McCain. Both conventions were trying to promote the candidate as the person who can save America, who can make America America again. And so we're gonna look at that today, and really examine, what was it that these folks were really talking about? What is it? Because you have both camps are projecting themselves as the camp that will bring about change. Both candidates, so Barack Obama and John McCain, are trying to be the candidate for change, or putting themselves forward as the candidate for change. But the question is, what kind of change are they really talking about? What kind of change are they really talking about? And are either of them talking about a different kind of change from each other? Want to say, just starting out, that the fact that they're talking about change itself is a statement of the crisis of this system, because the reality is that for the most part, the imperialism for the most part is always trying to maintain things as they are. And if there's any change that it's attempting to do, it is attempting to tighten its grip on the resources of colonized peoples of the world. When you talk about the when you look at I also want to make it clear, you know, as we did on last week before we started, that when we're looking at the Democratic and Republican parties, we are looking at two heads of the same monster, two sides of the same coin. The fact is, we live in a society that is a split between those who have and those who don't have. And in such a society, in a society that is split between different classes, one class who has as a result of having taken from those who don't have, and the other class that has had everything taken from it, then you have everything in that society has a class basis, has a class interest that it works in, and despite best attempts by both parties to project themselves forward as speaking to the interest of workers, the reality is that both parties are representatives of the white ruling class. And so when we talk about them being two sides of the same coin, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the fact that they both represent the interests of the white ruling class. While they represent different sectors of the white ruling class, they both unite around the fact that the white ruling class has to maintain its domination. So what you're looking at when we look at these elections is a nonviolent struggle between these different sectors of the white ruling class, who have different particular interests but have the same general interest, same class interest. So the elections, like I said, a nonviolent contest between these different sectors, and occasionally it becomes violent, as you saw with the assassination of John Kennedy, the assassination even of Lincoln, the reality is that the purpose of the elections itself is to allow for this struggle between these different sectors of the bourgeoisie, these different sectors of the white ruling class, to make this struggle to contend for control of the state. And that's the thing. And we're talking about the state, we're talking about this entity that as we've said, numerous times before on the show, is an entity, is an apparatus of coercion, is this force that's there for the purpose of maintaining the relationship between those who have and those who don't have, through force, through coercion, and the state, is this body that includes, includes the army, includes the navy, includes the police, who murdered Javon Dawson and Sean Bell, that includes the justice system, so-called justice system, the courts. Includes all of these things. This is the state that like I said, is the prisons. It's the state that through force, through coercion, maintains this relationship. It's the thing that prevents homeless people from going and living in homes that are empty or abandoned, and keeps hungry people from going into supermarkets that throw away food, and keeps them from getting food from there. And so these elections are struggles, nonviolent struggles between different sectors of the white ruling class to have control of the state. And so as such, you will never see, despite lip service, you will never see either of these parties representing the interests of the African working class or any working class. It will represent the interest of the white ruling class constantly. That's their purpose. You know, they are advanced detachment of that class. You know, and so. Just wanted to make that clear going into this thing, because some people tend to think, you know, well, if you oppose Obama, then you're for McCain, or if you oppose McCain, then you're for Obama. But the reality is that, you know, they the same thing. And the only reason why anybody could come to that type of conclusion is because of the defeat of the Black Revolution of the 60s. The only reason why anyone could come to the conclusion that being opposed to a candidate in a bourgeois election means support for another candidate of in the same electoral process is because they because of their lack of understanding of the revolutionary process, lack of understanding of what is required to change this world. From a world that's based on the oppression and exploitation of most of the people around the world for the interest of white power and U.S. and European imperialism. So saying that to open up this section of the show. Again, you know, as we're looking at this stuff, I want, you know, folk to participate in this discussion. You can do so by calling in, to a U.S. number, which is 727-565-1599. That's country code 001. You can call our UK or England number, which is, 020-8133-6629. And that's country code 44. Or you can call us through Skype anywhere in the African world. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio. That's all one word, all lowercase. And if you need to find out how to get Skype, you can look on the uhururadio.com website on the right side, and you can find instructions on how to do that. Or email us at dj@uhururadio.com if you're phone shy. We're going to look at just a few of the presentations that were made at the Republican National Convention. First, looking at the presentation that was made by their current president, George W. Bush, George Walker Bush, who the McCain campaign really has been attempting to distance itself from, because of the fact that, nobody likes Bush. Very few people like Bush. His presentation was a short one in this convention, and was not wanted, but the McCain camp is attempting to paint McCain as something different from Bush, when the reality is that McCain is no different from Bush. The reality is that Obama ain't that much different from Bush either. But there's really an attempt by McCain to distance himself from this guy. But I wanted to play a couple of clips from the presentation that Bush made. It's interesting to hear this guy talk, because you wait to see, you know, what stupid thing he's going to say this time. But anyway, this is a clip from George Walker Bush speaking at the Republican National Convention.
I know what it takes to be president. In these past 8 years, I've sat at the Resolute desk and reviewed the daily intelligence briefings, the threat assessments, and the reports from our commanders on the front lines. I've stood in the ruins of buildings knocked down by killers and promised the survivors I would never let them down. I know the hard choices that fall solely to a president. John McCain's life has prepared him to make those choices. He is ready to lead this nation. From the day of his commissioning, John McCain was a respected naval officer who made decisions on which the lives of others depended. As an elected public servant, he earned the respect of colleagues in both parties as a man to follow when there's a tough call to make. John McCain's life is a story of service above self. 40 years ago, in an enemy prison camp, Lieutenant Commander McCain was offered release ahead of others who had been held longer. His wounds were so severe that anyone would have understood if he'd accepted. John refused. For that selfless decision, he suffered nearly 5 more years of beatings and isolation. When he was released, his arms had been broken, but not his honor. My fellow citizens.
That was Bush talking about McCain, as you know, talking about this guy, this warmonger, this this imperialist former troop, who you know was you know captured in the process of making war in Vietnam. Has given accounts of his being held there. It's interesting how you know McCain is characterized, as his prisoner of war, and how you know they talk about he was tortured, it was so bad. At the same time, so many people are being held in places like Guantanamo Bay. And other prisons, some secret prisons, you know, around the world that are run by the U.S., you know, and being tortured, you know, and this government, you know, saying, you know, forget democratic rights for anybody, you know, we do what we want to do, we torture folk if we want to torture folk, and you know, it's just interesting how, you know, there's this picture painted of this heroic guy who, you know, suffering as a result of having made been a part of this terroristic war that was waged against the people of Vietnam. Having been a pilot who dropped bombs on people of Vietnam, talking about this heroic guy who was captured as a result of his participation in the murders of the people of Vietnam and attempts to take from them their own capacity to control their own lives. And the difference between the characterization of this guy who's supposedly heroic versus the characterization of the people who are being held in prisons like Guantanamo Bay and have been tortured in prisons like Abu Ghraib and other prisons that many of which we you know never hear the names of around the world. It's interesting to see the difference here, and I just wanted to say that briefly. I'm gonna play another clip from good old. From your guy, George W. Bush.
My fellow citizens, we live in a dangerous world. And we need a president who understands the lessons of September the 11th, 2001, that to protect America, we must stay on the offense, stop attacks before they happen, and not wait to be hit again. The man we need is John McCain. When he takes office next January, John will have an outstanding leader at his side. America will have a strong and principled vice president in the governor of the great state of Alaska, Sarah Palin.
Which talks about, he basically says that that McCain is prepared to make war against the peoples of the world. He's prepared to go ahead and do that, you know. And it's interesting to me to see even the responses to this type of thing. And it's clear, you know, while the Barack Obama's candidacy is one that as the Democratic Party usually does, kind of underhandedly, you know, plans to make these attacks against the peoples of the world, including, you know, Iran and people of Palestine and Syria and whatnot. The Republican Party is out in the open with it, and it's just interesting to see, you know, how while McCain is, calls himself, you know, like this person for change, he intends to do the same kind of things. He intends to go out and make war against the peoples of the world in order to continue to be able to steal their resources. So he also makes a nod to Sarah Palin, who has been selected as McCain's running mate. We're going to talk a bit about Palin as well, because I think even the whole Sarah Palin phenomenon is an interesting one as well. We're going to take a break here, though, come back with some more here on Africa Live on AhuraRadio.com. Stay tuned. Uhura.
Might be hard, but we harder. that's why we sing.
Living this life as a rebel.
Johnson was 92 at the time of the cops' arrival. If you living in black, survival ain't an item you got a right to. That's right, dude. You have some sense, you wanna stand up and fight too. Surprise you, mess around and get an example made out of you. Mind your own business and them cops make you a piñata. See a lot of dudes get shook up and get the slackest. But I had to choose to put them books up and get the action. I'm asking, are you a good slave or the bad one? Do you bust backwards and backwards? The master putting them lashes on your back. I'm that last one, that bad one. That one you see when the master's house is burning, pouring the gas and rot with that turtle. That's the whole world. Fast forward some 100 years in time. Now we ride with Yes and Tell It and never stop the grind. I mean, yeah, life as a rebel can be hard sometimes. But it's even harder for a slave that can't make up his mind to fight back.
Living this life. It's a rebel. It's hard living this life as a rebel. It's hard living this life as a rebel. It's hard living this life as a rebel.
Uhuru, welcome back to Africa Live on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Yabinga Zimbabwe. We're talking right now about the Republican National Convention, and we intend to be talking later on with Salvador Reza, who is the coordinator of Puente, a human rights organization based in Phoenix, Arizona, that does work primarily around the immigration question. So, again, right now we're talking about the Republican National Convention, and it's an interesting thing. We played a clip earlier about from George Bush's presentation, who reassured the warmongers out there, you know, that McCain is prepared to continue in the process of making war against colonized peoples around the world to steal their resources. I really want to, you know, remind us in the context, put this thing in context that we're dealing with here, this Republican National Convention, because I do want to be clear. You know, we asked this question before about what about the black community? It was asked of Obama, and it was asked of all the candidates who are running for president of the United States. In fact, all the candidates are invited to a convention, have been invited to a convention that's happening at the end of this month, the 27th and 28th of September in St. Petersburg, Florida. A convention held by the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, and are being asked, you know, this question: what about the black community? Because throughout this this campaign, interest of Israel have been talked about, the interest of various communities have been talked about, but the interest of black community has been completely ignored. And so the question about what about the black community was asked, you know, of all these candidates, and the Democratic Convention, this question was not answered in the Republican National Convention either. We have to, in looking at this thing, looking at these conventions, looking at the actions of the Democratic and Republican parties, recognize, look at them in the context of the interests of the African working class community. Because for too long, we've been told that that we shouldn't look for our own interests. You know, it's everybody's interest, you know. But the reality is that they never work in everybody's interest either. Both of those parties are representatives of the white ruling class and work in the interest of the white ruling class. And the only time that you see any type of rights or concessions afforded to the African working class or any community, it comes as a result of intense struggle. So you know, we look at these conventions, we look at the actions of the Democratic and Republican parties in that context. So continuing in looking at the Republican National Convention, I want to look at a presentation made by Joe Lieberman, which is an interesting presentation because, you know, Joe Lieberman was vice president on the vice president on the Democratic ticket in 2000 under Al Gore. So it was Gore and Lieberman, and he was a Democrat. But for some reason, Joe Lieberman finds himself at the Republican National Convention this year. And I think it's an interesting thing. You know, that we saw here, you know, with that. And we're going to talk a bit about that. I want to play a clip from his presentation first. And we're going to go into that a little bit, you know, about, you know, because, yeah, about this question of country first, you know. So this is Joe Lieberman at the Republican National Convention.
Senator Barack Obama is a gifted and eloquent young man who I think can do great things for our country in the years ahead. But my friends, eloquence is no substitute for a record, not in these tough times for America. What, after all, is a Democrat like me doing at a Republican convention like this? Well, I'll tell you what. I'm here to support John McCain because country matters more than party. I am here tonight for a simple reason. John McCain is the best choice to bring our country together and lead America forward. And dear friends, I am here tonight because John McCain's whole life testifies to a great truth. Being a Democrat or a Republican is important, but it is nowhere near as important as being an American.
Yes! 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 Yes!
That was part of Joe Lieberman's presentation at the Republican National Convention. It's funny. Was a few things funny. One is the guy who sounds like he's frothing at the mouth in the background. the thing that struck me here, you know, this whole country first thing, you know, there's an assumption. There's a underlying thing here, you know. You know, because in this whole presentation that Lieberman makes, he really makes no no real statement as to why or why, you know, it makes sense to support Obama as opposed to supporting McCain. It makes no real good reason. It's especially, well, the only point that he makes, he liquidates that point, and we'll look at that in a minute. But the thing that stood out to me is this whole thing, question of country first. You know, they raise this country first, and it's, you know, it seems to me that it's a call to white nationalism. First of all, U.S. patriotism is white nationalism. It is. You can't be a U.S. patriot without supporting the attacks on colonized peoples, both inside of the U.S. and outside of the U.S. You can't be a U.S. patriot and not support that, because the U.S. is maintained off of that, is built off of that, built off of the enslavement of African people and the continuing economic and you know, exploitation of African people, as well as the theft of the land of indigenous peoples here. So you can't be a U.S. patriot without being in support of these types of attacks, because those types of attacks is the thing that makes America America, you know. So throughout the Republican convention, you see all these signs being raised that say country first. Country first, you know, and even, you know, the people who are, you know, are speaking, they, you know, they say country first. And it seems to me that what that is a call rallying white people to look at the country, look at maintaining this, you know, the legacy of America. Don't, you know, don't put this Negro in office. You know, what are you, crazy? You know, maintain this legacy of America. And the funniest part about it, though, is the fact that that's the same thing Obama's talking about. Maintaining the legacy of America, bringing back the American promise, the American dream, you know. And but the reality is that that the American dream is something that's happened at the expense of African people. It's the American dream is an African nightmare, and a nightmare for other colonized peoples, Mexicans and other indigenous peoples, you know, and people around the world, because American dream comes at our expense. But it's interesting to see this move from Joe Lieberman from the Democratic Party, from having just a couple elections ago been on the presidential ticket for the Democratic Party, now finding himself at the Republican National Convention opposing the Democratic Party. And I'm telling you, it's not it's clear that it's not because of some policy thing, but because it's trying to maintain, you know, country first, trying to maintain the legacy of America. And that's a white nationalist type of thing. It's this white nationalist nationalism that has Joe Lieberman there. You know, and like I said, because he doesn't say anything of real substance as to why he supports McCain instead of Obama. And that's something that you see, throughout the U.S., notwithstanding the fact, I mean, you can even look at the polls and see that, you know, where, you know, the Republican government has like this ridiculously low rating. You know, George Bush's approval rating was at like 19%. And I've seen some polls that showed, you know, worse, you know, but despite that, you know, you see in the polls Obama and McCain neck and neck in the election, you know, despite the fact that McCain is tied to this to you know, the same type of policies that Bush is tied to, despite the fact that McCain has said that he would continue with the unpopular war. Despite, you know, all of these things, they're neck and neck, Obama and McCain are, I think that's a statement. That's a statement of the fact that there's this extremely serious hurdle that the Democratic Party has to get over, you know, for Obama to get in office, which is a doubtful thing. This legacy of white nationalism, this legacy of this thing that they call racism, which is the justification, the ideological justification of this relationship, this relationship where all of people's wealth and resources around the world, all of people's labor around the world go to build for white people. You know, this justification, this relationship where white people could live off of everybody else. This ideological justification is the thing that says, you know, that African people are incapable or inferior, you know, or not human, you know, and they got that whole thing to get over. And even while, you know, there are white people who say, I'm telling you, even while there are white people who say that they will vote for Obama, they lie. So even when you look at the fact it's a tight race, when it shouldn't be, Obama should be way far above McCain. But the fact, even with it being a tight race and Obama having a slight lead, and some polls showing that McCain has a lead, that can't even be trusted, really, because you have, you know, a lot of white people who will say that they'll vote for Obama, but when they go into those polls, I'm telling you, they won't do it. You know, they will not vote for an African. I think we have to be continuously reminded the fact that it doesn't matter if they do or not, because Obama is just as bad as McCain is. Obama is just as bad as McCain is. And in fact, neocolonialism tends to be worse than regular colonialism because it has a cover of a black face or a face that looks like the colonized peoples, you know, to make these attacks on colonized peoples. Joe Lieberman's participation in the Republican National Convention is an indication. This whole country first thing is an indication of white nationalism winning over party alliances. You know, white nationalism being the prevailing thing. So I'm gonna play another clip from Joe Lieberman here.
Senator Barack Obama is a gifted and eloquent young man who I think can do great things for our country in the years ahead. But my friends, eloquence is no substitute for a record, not in these tough times for America. In the Senate, during the 3.5 years that Senator Obama has been a member, he has not reached across party lines to accomplish anything significant, nor has he been willing to take on powerful interest groups in the Democratic Party to get something done. And I just ask you to contrast that with John McCain's record of independence and bipartisanship. But let me go one further. And this may make history here at this Republican convention. Let me contrast Barack Obama's record to the record of the last Democratic president, Bill Clinton, who stood up to some of those same Democratic interest groups, worked with Republicans, and got some important things done, like welfare reform, free trade agreements, and a balanced budget. Now, I'm honored to say just a word about the great lady that John McCain has selected as his running mate. Governor Palin, like John McCain, is a reformer. She's taken on the special interest and the political power brokers in Alaska and reached across party lines to get things done. The truth is, she is a leader we can count on to help John shake up Washington. That's why I sincerely believe that the real ticket for change this year is the McCain-Palin ticket. Let me tell you, friends, that the Washington bureaucrats and the power brokers are not going to be able to build a pen that will hold in these two mavericks. It's just not possible. Together, I think we can count on John and Sarah to fight for America and to fight for you, the American people. And that's what our country needs most right now. We all know it. These are tough times here at home, and we have dangerous enemies in the world. And what America needs now, frankly, is not more party unity. What we need now is more national unity. And this is especially true, of course, because we are a nation at war. We need a president we can count on to fight for what's right for our country, not only when it's easy, but when it's hard. And I was there, so I can tell you, when others were silent about the war in Iraq, John McCain had the guts and the judgment to sound the alarm about the mistakes we were making in Iraq. You know, when others wanted to retreat in defeat from the field of battle, which would have been a disaster for the USA, when colleagues like Barack Obama were voting to cut off funding for our American troops on the battlefield, John McCain had the courage to stand against the tide of public opinion, advocate the surge, support the surge, and because of that today, America's troops are coming home, thousands of them, and they're coming home in honor.
Again, that was Joe Lieberman at the Republican National Convention. This is Africa Live on AhuraRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyampinga Zimbabwe. Right now, we're looking at the Republican National Convention. And we intend to talk later on with Salvador Reza, who is the coordinator of Puente, about actions in opposition to a sheriff in Phoenix, Arizona. You can participate in the discussion that we're having now at by calling in. You can call our U.S. number, which is 727-565-1599. That's country code 001. You can call our UK number, which is 020-8133-6629. That's country code 44. You can call us from anywhere in the African world through Skype. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio. That's all one word, all lowercase. Or you can email us at dj@uhururadio.com. So we're looking at the Republican National Convention. That was a clip from Joe Lieberman, who was, it's funny because he's talking about why not to vote for Barack Obama. This is a statement of you know, again, this whole question of white nationalism being first, white nationalism winning even over party lines. While Lieberman talks about Obama's inability to run this thing because of his lack of experience and whatnot, he raises up Palin, who increasingly is everyone's seeing following her introduction to the campaign has become like the central force. You know, some people question whether it's McCain Palin or Palin McCain, and then even the question of McCain being so old that he may die in the process of becoming president, that Palin will become president. But he, despite he raises up Obama. I mean, he says that Obama is this great guy who might be able to do things in the future, but implying that, you know, that he has no experience, but at the same time raises up Palin, who arguably has about the same amount or maybe less experience than Obama, who, you know, has been mayor of a city of about 8,000 people. But Lieberman can, on one hand, just like most of the people in the Republican Party are finding themselves having to do, on one hand, talk about Obama's inexperience, and then raise up Palin, who is also inexperienced. It's funny to see, because the thing is the his ability to do that is based on his, this. Real white nationalist, thing has him, supporting somebody, even going to Republican National Convention and speaking, as opposed to just voting against this party, but going to the Republican National Convention and speaking against the Democratic candidate. It's just an interesting thing to see. And like I said before, I think that's it's something that you see across the U.S. Where white people who would have supported Hillary Clinton instead of supporting McCain because they will not vote for an African, despite the fact that Barack Obama is just as white nationalist as John McCain is. They will not vote for this guy just because of the fact that he's an African. So it's an interesting thing to see. Like I said, it's clear white nationalism, even this whole slogan "Country First," which is basically saying, don't vote with your party. Do it for the country, do it for the country. And obviously they're not talking, that they're saying this based on the fact that there's an African candidate, who is running, for the Democratic Party. I want to play another clip here, from, Lieberman. After we talk about that a little bit, we're going to go to a break. This is Joe Lieberman again at the Republican National Convention.
My friends, I have had the privilege and I'd say the pleasure of traveling the world with John McCain. Even with Lindsey Graham, it was a pleasure. But I speak of John and I say that I can tell you from these travels how much he's respected and admired and liked by leaders across the globe. John McCain will be a president our allies will trust and our enemies will fear. And that's the kind of president we need in today's world.
Both worked at the
So that's Joe Lieberman again, and he's repeating a theme that we saw also at the Democratic National Convention when they were talking about their candidate, and talking about the fact that people will trust us with this guy, people around the world, and it's an indication. It's an indication. He said our allies will trust us and our enemies will fear us, And but the reality is, it's a statement. When they're having to vote based on who will help people around the world to trust America. It's a statement of where America is right now, a statement of the crisis that is being faced by U.S. imperialism, and really a crisis by being faced by imperialism in general, because U.S. imperialism is the leading imperialist power at the moment. It's a statement, though, because they have to really deal with this question of changing the perception of America around the world. And its relationship with people around the world, trying to make it so, make it more capable of dealing around the world, because nobody trusts America, nobody likes America, everybody recognizes that America is a problematic force in the world. And but the funny thing is that you know, he's saying that about his candidate, when the and the fact is that the Barack Obama candidacy was created for the purpose of doing that. That's part of its main purpose, was to make it possible for people around the world to respect America, to trust America. Joe Biden said the same thing about Obama at the Democratic National Convention, because America's at a place right now, like I said, where everybody's opposing America. Colonized peoples around the world are making these serious struggles in all these places, and it needs capacity to solve its crisis. It needs to make it possible to maintain these parasitic relationships with colonized peoples around the world. But the thing is, it's interesting here, because both parties recognize that need. Both parties recognize the need to change that relationship. And even when they're talking about change, you know, as both parties are talking about, both candidates are talking about, you know, neither one of them are talking about changing the actual relationships in the world that they have. Neither one of them are talking about actually changing the fact that America is an imperialist power. What they're talking about is changing things back to a place where America is able to steal resources around the world without having to deal with the type of resistance that it faces right now. We're gonna take a break here. Continue on with more here on Africa Live on AhuraRadio.com.
Hey! Got to pay back. Revenge. I'm mad. Get back. I need some get back.
Big payback. Every time I hear that song, it makes me think about reparations. It makes me think about what's owed to African people for the, you know, years, for the centuries of slavery and colonialism, the continued exploitation through, you know, the convict leasing system. It may have changed names and stuff, but still Africans are being forced to work for free. The millions of Africans, the at least 1 million Africans locked up in U.S. prisons today, and the several millions who go through the prison system every year. You know, the big payback, you know, for the murders of our children, like Javon Dawson, like Tyron Lewis, like Marquel McCullough, and like Sean Bell, like Gerald Walker, and the countless others. Big payback for the continuing exploitation of African people every day. Every time I hear that song, it makes me think about reparations and the fact that that's a just demand and something that we got to get, the big payback, reparations. Which also has me looking forward to the tribunal that's happening next year in South Africa, the Truth and Reparations World Tribunal on Reparations to Africa and African people. And we'll be talking about that in the future. But today we're talking about the Republican National Convention. I have to say, we intended to have on with us today Salvador Reza, who is coordinator of Puente, a organization that deals with immigrant rights in Arizona, that is involved in demonstrations, daily demonstrations in front of a Wells Fargo bank building, which is serving as the headquarters of a terroristic sheriff in Phoenix. Apparently, you know, I have some concern about the fact that we've been unable to reach him, just because of the fact that it's not far fetched. It's not something that's odd for people to be arrested just for struggling for democratic rights. Hopefully, we'll be able to get him on in the near future. But it looks like we won't be able to have Mr. Salvador Reza on today. However, we'll continue with discussion about the Republican National Convention. One of the things that I said before that was interesting is the fact that Sarah Palin, the introduction of Sarah Palin onto the presidential ticket as the vice presidential nominee. It's interesting because this is an attempt by the Republican Party to take advantage of supporters of Hillary Clinton, particularly those supporters who would have been voting for Clinton based on the fact that she, the historical significance presented by there being a first woman leading up the leading imperialist power in the world. This is an attempt clearly to take advantage of her base, and there are some indications that it is working. The polls are shifting. They're constantly shifting, and the lead that Obama once had, he doesn't quite have anymore. Thing is, you have that question. You have the question of white nationalism, which is a serious question that I believe is going to make it make it so that Obama will not win unless some some extraordinary thing happens between now and November. But Sarah Palin is interesting. Her nomination to the vice presidential place on the Republican ticket, because up to now, one of the things that the Republican Party had been harping on Obama was the fact that he had, you know, little experience. You know, he hadn't been in the game of attacking Africans and other colonized peoples for that long. You know, and so they've been using that against him. And it's interesting because then they pick Sarah Palin, who similarly has little experience. Has not been in this game of attacking colonized peoples very long either. Was the mayor in a small town in Alaska, small town of around 8,000 people, and has for a short time been the governor of Alaska. It's interesting because you know, they're using this thing, this motion. From Sarah Palin's thing, it's like a reviving kind of thing for the Republican Party. Sarah Palin's become this main face, and you know, some people are reversing the way they talk about the thing. With, you know, usually it's McCain and Palin. You know, usually it's the president and the vice president is talked about. Now it's the vice president and the president. Some people say Palin McCain. You know. But the reality is that she, despite her lack of experience, is showing herself clearly to be a really rabid white nationalist as well. She's someone who you know, is calling for the same kind of attacks on colonized peoples around the world. And has, you know, lots of the same type. I mean, has like really conservative Republican positions, you know, around even abortion and other things. You know, I want to look at the presentation that she made at the convention, which overshadowed McCain's presentation in a serious kind of way. People aren't talking about McCain's presentation; they're talking about Sarah Palin's presentation. So I want to play some clips from that, and we're going to talk about that a bit. Again, you can participate in the discussion by calling in. Our U.S. number is 727-565-1599. That's country code 001. Our U.K. or British number is 020-8133-6629. That's country code 44. You can call us through Skype. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio. That's all one word, all lowercase. Or email us at dj@uhururadio.com. This is Sarah Palin at the Republican National Convention.
My mom and dad both worked at the elementary school in our small town. And among the many things I owe them is a simple lesson that I've learned. That this is America, and every woman can walk through every door of opportunity. And my parents are here tonight. I am so proud to be the daughter of Chuck and Sally Heath. Long ago, a young farmer and a haberdasher from Missouri, he followed an unlikely path. He followed an unlikely path to the vice presidency. And a writer observed, "We grow good people in our small towns with honesty and sincerity and dignity." And I know just the kind of people that writer had in mind when he praised Harry Truman. I grew up with those people. They're the ones who do some of the hardest work in America, who grow our food and run our factories and fight our wars. They love their country in good times and bad, and they're always proud of America.
That was a quick swipe at Michelle Obama. Clearly, they're always proud of America, and she's also playing on the fact that she's a small, just playing on the small town thing. Something that gives her credentials as somebody who's super American. Continuing with the clips from Sarah Palin, vice presidential nominee for the Republican Party.
Before I became governor of the great state of Alaska, I was mayor of my hometown. And since our opponents in this presidential election seem to look down on that experience, let me explain to them what the job involves. Town mayor is sort of like a community organizer, except that you have actual responsibilities. That in small towns, we don't quite know what to make of a candidate who lavishes praise on working people when they're listening and then talks about how bitterly they cling to their religion and guns when those people aren't listening. Now, we tend to prefer candidates who don't talk about us one way in Scranton and another way in San Francisco. As for my running mate, you can be certain that wherever he goes and whoever is listening, John McCain is the same man. Pipeline, when the last section is laid and its valves are open, will lead America one step.
It's funny to watch these guys take pot shots at each other. The whole attack on the community organizing thing, and I think a lot of people took offense to that. People who are community organizers, of course. I don't see how anybody could take offense to that and not take offense to most everything else that's said at either one of these conventions, because both of them been making anybody who's principled, because both of them been making serious kind of attacks on African, making statements that they intend to make some serious kind of attacks on the African community. In fact, one of the things that was pointed out by Lieberman earlier. He was talking about the difference between Obama and Clinton, but the thing is, he seemed to be a bit misinformed, because Obama is going to be making the same kind of attacks on African people that Clinton was making. We've got a caller. Caller, you're on there.
Uhuru, Black Power.
Uhuru.
I just wanted to make a comment. It's unfortunate that the brother from Arizona couldn't be on the show, but I think it's still a good show. I think it's really exciting, the period that we're living in. I mean, I couldn't watch that stuff. I really didn't have the stomach for it.
Yeah.
But, I've seen clips subsequent to both the conventions.
Yeah.
And just a couple of things. I think this particular presidential election is wrought with desperation.
Yeah.
It just reeks of desperation. On the one hand, people were saying, Obama is a bit of a pansy. He kind of dances around the issue. So he had to get this hard, you know, this hard-ass white guy to be his running mate. And then on the contrary, and, you know, and all the pleas that Hillary Clinton made to her, you know, white nationalist female, you know, hardcore feminist constituency to vote for Barack. Vote for Barack. It's okay. I know you guys are mad, but vote for Barack, right? And I think it was really smart on behalf of the Republican Party to make Palin the running mate.
Yeah.
Because they understand the question of white nationalism.
Yeah.
And they knew all those white women out there who are rabid, and it wasn't even a question of Hillary Clinton as much as it is white nationalism, feminist white nationalism, that would have all of these women putting forward that they would prefer voting for McCain, right,
mm-hmm.
who is extremely to the right of what generally their ideological views are. For the simple fact that he has chosen a woman as his running mate. They would abandon all their principles and all their opposition to the Republican Party for the simple fact that they would much prefer vote for that white woman than vote for that Negro.
Yeah.
And I just think it's great. I think it was a smart move on behalf of the Republican Party, but it was also a move of desperation because they saw themselves losing to Barack without doing something drastic.
Yeah.
For them to select a female vice president running mate for the first time in history,
yeah,
is an obvious state of desperation. I think the chairman's been saying all along, no matter how the thing goes down, no matter what the outcome of this election is, it is a win-win situation for the revolution.
Yeah,
ain't no losing for us. I think it's great.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I appreciate the shout.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And,
sure.
And she's right. You know, she's right. It is, you know, all of what you're seeing is an indication of desperation. Even all of what you hear them talking about, everybody's talking about, you know, how to make America America again, how to solve these problems of America, how to make people in the world trust America. And, you know, all these things, it's a statement of crisis. It's desperation that you see. And even the. You know, Yapple talked about the fact that the selection of Sarah Palin, who, you know, has no really experience, and that being a criticism that they were making of Barack Obama, is an indication of desperation on the Republican Party's part. But the candidacy of Barack Obama itself is an indication of desperation on the part of the Democratic Party as well. The whole white ruling class is in serious desperation. It's trying to hold this thing together. It's trying to keep U.S. imperialism from falling off the face of the map. And despite, you know, their greatest efforts, they cannot solve this crisis. They cannot solve the crisis. And Barack Obama ain't gonna solve the crisis. You know, McCain and Palin are not gonna solve the crisis. The fact is, either way, it's gonna get deeper. But what we have to see is the African working class is how we take advantage of the crisis and to move towards our interest of gaining self-determination and the unification and liberation of Africa and African people everywhere around the world. I got a couple more clips to play, and we don't have very much time, so I'm gonna play these and we'll talk a bit more about this thing. This is Sarah Palin again at the Republican National Convention.
Pipeline, when the last section is laid and its valves are open, will lead America one step farther away from dependence on dangerous foreign powers that do not have our interests at heart. The stakes for our nation could not be higher. When a hurricane strikes in the Gulf of Mexico, this country should not be so dependent on imported oil that we're forced to draw from our strategic petroleum reserve. And families cannot throw more and more of their paychecks on gas and heating oil. With Russia wanting to control a vital pipeline in the Caucasus and to divide and intimidate our European allies by using energy as a weapon, we cannot leave ourselves at the mercy of foreign suppliers. To confront the threat that Iran might seek to cut off nearly a fifth of the world's energy supplies, or that terrorists might strike again at the Abqaiq facility in Saudi Arabia, or that Venezuela might shut off its oil discoveries and its deliveries of that source, Americans, we need to produce more of our own oil and gas and take it from a gal who knows the North Slope of Alaska. We've got lots of both.
You know, for a second, you know, somebody who's uninformed might say, that sounds good. You know, it means them not stealing, you know, all this oil, this foreign oil, you know, from the Middle East. That's good, isn't it? But then if you think for a second, you realize, hold on. This is stolen land. You know, so now what you're saying is that you want to stop having to steal oil long distance, but instead steal it right in front of you from people who you stole this land from, and many of whom you keep in concentration camps called reservations, you know, with lifespans in like the 40s, you know, people who you build fences to keep out of their own land that you stole not very long ago. Some of which, particularly the western area of the U.S. was recently stolen. It's Mexico, you know, half of Mexico having been stolen only maybe 150 years or so ago, you know. And so now what they're saying is what she's putting forward and the Republican Party is putting forward and other forces is, you know, instead of having to go way across the Atlantic and steal oil from the Arabs, instead let's steal the oil from the indigenous people who we stole the land from in the first place. It's still, you know, some nasty stuff, and it is also a statement of the desperation, a statement of the crisis, because they're having to entertain, having to stop taking oil from these other places in the world because it's becoming untenable to do so. You know, and like I said, this is made a question because of the growing crisis of imperialism. It's made a question because of the growing crisis, you know, the growing inability of white power to steal these resources. Here's another clip from Sarah Palin, where she's really getting into you know, the usual white nationalism, you know, the pro America, anti everything else.
Our opponents say again and again that drilling will not solve all of America's energy problems, as if we didn't know that already. But the fact that drilling, though, won't solve every problem is no excuse to do nothing at all. Starting in January, in a McCain-Palin administration, we're going to lay more pipelines and build more nuclear plants and create jobs with clean coal and move forward on solar, wind, geothermal, and other alternative sources. We need American sources of resources. We need American energy brought to you by American ingenuity and produced by American workers. America needs more energy. Our opponent is against producing it. Victory in Iraq is finally in sight, and he wants to forfeit. Terrorist states are seeking nuclear weapons without delay. He wants to meet them without preconditions. Al-Qaeda terrorists still plot to inflict catastrophic harm on America, and he's worried that someone won't read them their rights.
This is rabid. This is rabid. Notwithstanding the fact that she's presenting Obama as someone who is not just as rabid as they are, which is false. This is just overtly rabid. I mean, they seem to be really attempting to convince themselves that they're about to win something in Iraq. They're coming out of Iraq with some kind of victory. It's interesting because I keep hearing them say that throughout the convention, and it seems that they feel that if they lie to themselves enough, then everybody will believe it. But the other thing that was interesting to me is the fact that she's making the statement that, that basically that they don't care about democratic rights for nobody. They don't care about none of that stuff. They will make these serious kind of attacks against whoever, Iraq or wherever. And people won't get read their rights and nothing. You won't get any kind of rights. You don't have any rights if they have a problem with you. It's interesting. It's interesting how rabid they are, but also how similar they are to the Republican Party. To the Democratic Party. It's sometimes you get them mixed up because they're pretty much the same thing. This, the thing is, this is both of these conventions are indication, the character of them, the themes that you constantly seeing are indication of the crisis and the indications of the crisis that imperialism is facing and attempts to pull back the hands of time, to pull back the verdict that's being handed to them by the struggling peoples of the world, the verdict of an end to imperialism. But the thing is, they cannot turn it back. They cannot. The genie is out of the bottle, and there is no way to get it back in there. So the thing for us to understand, though, is that our solution as African people, wherever we find ourselves, whether we find ourselves in the U.S. or whether we find ourselves spread to other places like Britain or Jamaica or any of these other places that we have been brought to as a result of the attack on Africa, African people, we have to see our interests. And work for our own interests, not to work for somebody else's agenda. And the reality is, participation in this electoral process, voting for McCain or Obama, who both of whom are making real pledges to continue to attack colonized peoples everywhere around the world. ain't gonna push forward our agenda. What we have to be fighting for, what we have to be struggling for, is freedom and independence for African people. Is self-determination. Is for the unification and liberation of African people. And that does not come on a ballot. That comes through struggling, organizing in the streets, getting organized to make a struggle in the interest of the African working class, which is the only force capable of leading our struggle, leading our revolution to its fruition. Stand with the African Socialist International. That's what we have to do. We have to build this International African Revolutionary Party, because like I said, the Democratic Party ain't gonna do it for you. The Republican Party ain't gonna do it for you. The APC these various parties throughout the African world won't do it for you. What has to happen is that African people have to get organized. African working class has to be organized in our own interest to win freedom for ourselves, to win power for ourselves. So I want to thank those of you who listened and participated in the show today. And calling you to stay tuned, because next up you have Uhuru on the Move, hosted by MP Dumb President Ivory Samora Sibukwe and MP Dumb Membership Coordinator Kobina Bantu Shango, here on UhuruRadio.com.
Africa Live.
At home.